Chapter 14. Zakalwe. No. Still the same refusal. They stood in a park at the edge of a large, neatly mown lawn, under some tall, pollarded trees. The warm breeze carried the ocean scent and a hint of flowers whispering through the copse. The clearing morning mist still veiled two suns. Smar shook her head in exasperation and walked off a little way. He leant against a tree, clutching at his chest, breathing with difficulty. Scathin Antiskor hovered nearby, keeping a watch on the man, but playing with an insect on the trunk of another tree. Scathin Antiskor thought the man was mad. Certainly he was weird. He had never really explained why he'd gone wandering through the mayhem of the citadel storming. When Smar and the drone had finally found him and picked him up, bullet-riddled, half-dead, and raving from the top of the curtain wall, he had insisted they stabilize his condition, no more. He did not want to be made well. He would not listen to sense. And still the xenophobe, when it had picked them all up, had refused to pronounce the man insane and incapable of making up his own mind, and so had dutifully put him into a low metabolism sleep for the 15-day journey to the planet where the woman called Livweta Zakalwe now lived. He'd come out of his slow sleep as ill as he'd gone into it. The man was a walking mess, and there were still two bullets inside him, but he refused to accept any treatment until he'd seen this woman. Bizarre, Scathin Antiskor thought, using an extended field to block the path of a small insect as it felt and picked its way up the trunk of the tree. The insect changed direction, feelers waving. There was another type of insect further up the trunk, and Scathin Antiskor was trying to get them to meet, to see what would happen. Bizarre, and even, indeed, perverse. Okay. He coughed. One lung, the drone knew, filling up with blood. Let's go. He pushed himself away from the tree. Scathin Antiskor abandoned its game with the two insects regretfully. The drone felt odd being here. The planet was known about, but had not yet been fully investigated by contact. It had been discovered through research rather than physical exploration, and while there was nothing obviously outlandish about the place, and a very rudimentary survey had been carried out, technically it was still terra incognita, and Scathin Antiskor was on a relatively high state of alert, just in case the place held any nasty surprises. Smar went to the bald-headed man and put her arm round his waist, helping to support him. Together they walked up the small slope of lawn towards a low ridge. Scathin Antiskor watched them go, from the cover of the treetops, then swooped slowly down towards them as they walked to the summit of the gentle slope. The man staggered when he saw what was on the far side, in the distance. The drone suspected he would have fallen to the grass if Smar hadn't been there to hold him up. Shit! He breathed and tried to straighten, blinking in a sudden slant of sunlight as the mists continued to evaporate. He stumbled another couple of steps, shook Smar off, and turned round once, taking in the parkland. Shaped trees and manicured lawns, ornamental walls and delicate pergolas, stone-bordered ponds and shady paths through quiet groves. And in the distance, set amongst mature trees, the tattered black shape of the Stabberind. "They've made a fucking park out of it," he breathed, and stood swaying, bent slightly at the waist, looking at the battered silhouette of the old warship. Smar walked to his side. He seemed to sag a little, and she put her arm round his waist again. He grimaced with pain. They walked on, down towards a path which led to the ship. "Why did you want to see this, Sherad Enin?" Smar said quietly as they crunched along the gravel. The drone floated behind and above. "Huh?" the man said, taking his eyes off the ship for a second. "Why did you want to come here, Sherad Enin?" Smar asked. "She isn't here. This isn't where she is." "I know," he breathed. "I know that." "So why do you want to see this wreck?" He was silent for a little while. It was as though he hadn't heard, but then he took a deep breath, flinching with pain as he did so, and shook his sweat-sheened head as he said, "Oh, just for old time's sake." They passed through another copse of trees. He shook his shaved head again as they came out of the grove and saw the ship better. "I just didn't think they'd do this to it," he said.
"Do what?" Smar asked.
"This." He nodded at the blackened hulk. "What have they done, Sherad Enin?" Smar said patiently.
"Made it."
He began, then stopped, coughed, body tense with pain.
"Made the damn thing. An ornament. Preserved it."
"What, the ship?" He looked at her as though she were crazy.
"Yes," he said. "Yes. The ship."
Just a big old battleship hulk, cemented into a dock, as far as Scaffin Amtis Corps could see. It contacted the xenophobe, which was passing the time by making a detailed map of the planet.
"Hello, ship. This ship ruin in the park. Sir Calloway seems very interested. Just wondering why. Care to do some research?"
"In a while. I've got one continent, the deep sea beds, and the subsurface to do."
"They'll still be there later. This could prove interesting now."
"Patience, Scaffin Amtis Corps."
"Pedant," thought the drone, breaking off. The two humans walked down twisty paths past litter bins and benches, picnic tables and information points. Scaffin Amtis Corps activated one of the old information points as it passed. A slow and crackly tape started up. "The vessel you see before you..." This was going to take ages, Scaffin Amtis Corps thought. It used its effector to speed the machine up, winding the voice up into a high-pitched warble. The tape broke. Scaffin Amtis Corps delivered the effector equivalent of an annoyed slap and left the information machine smoking and dripping burning plastic onto the gravel beneath, as the two humans walked into the shadow of the battered ship. The ship had been left as it was. Bombed, shelled, strafed, blasted and ripped, but not destroyed. Where hands could not reach and rain did not strike, traces of the original soot from flames 2 centuries old still marked the armor plate. Gun turrets lay peeled open like tin cans. Gun barrels and range finders bristled askew all over the mounting levels of deck. Tangled stays and fallen aerials lay strewn over shattered searchlights and top-sided radar dishes. The single great funnel looked tipped and subsided, metal pitted and flayed. A little awning-covered stairway led up to the ship's main deck. They followed a couple with 2 young children. Scaffin Amtis Corps floated almost invisible 10 meters away, rising slowly with them. One of the toddlers cried when she saw the hobbling, bald-headed man with the staring eyes behind her. Her mother lifted her up and carried her. He had to stop and rest when they got to the deck. Smar guided him to a bench. He sat doubled up for a while, then looked at the ship above, taking in the blackened, rusted wreckage all around. He shook his shaven head, muttered to himself once, then ended up laughing quietly, holding his chest and coughing. "Museum," he said. "A museum." Smar put her hand on his damp brow. She thought he looked terrible, and the baldness didn't suit him. The simple, dark clothes they'd found him wearing when they picked him up from the citadel's curtain wall had been torn and crusted with blood. They'd been cleaned and repaired on the xenophobe, but they looked out of place here, where everybody seemed to be dressed in bright colours. Even Smar's culottes and jacket were sombre compared to the gaily decorated dresses and smocks most of the people were wearing. "This an old haunt of yours, Sheradinin?" she asked him. He nodded. "Yes," he breathed, looking up at a last few tendrils of mist flowing and disappearing like gaseous pennants from the tilted main mast. "Yes," he repeated. Smar looked round at the park behind and the city off to one side. "This where you came from?" He seemed not to hear. After a while he stood slowly and looked distracted into Smar's eyes. She felt herself shiver and tried to remember exactly how old Zakalwi was.
"Let's go, Da. Dissier."
He smiled a watery sort of smile.
"Take me to her, please."
Smar shrugged and supported the man by one shoulder. They went back to the steps that led back down to the ground. "Drone," Smar said to a brooch on her lapel.
"Yep."
"Our lady still where we last heard?"
"Indeed,"
said the drone's voice.
"Want to take the module?"
"No," he said, stumbling down a stair until Smar caught him.
"Not the module. Let's take a train. Or a cab. Or..."
"Are you sure?" Smar said.
"Yes, sure."
"Zakalwi," Smar sighed. "Please accept some treatment."
"No,"
the man said as they reached the ground.
"There's an underground station, right and right again," the drone told Smar. "A light central station, platform 8 for trains to Kuraz."
"Okay," Smar said, reluctantly glancing at him. He was looking down at the gravel path as though concentrating on working out which foot to put in front of another. He swung his head as they passed under the stem of the ruined battleship, squinting up at the tall, curving V of the bows. Smar watched the expression on his sweating face, and could not decide whether it was awe, disbelief, or something like terror. The underground train whisked them into the city centre down concrete-lined tunnels. The main station was crowded, tall, echoing and clean. Sunlight sparkled on the vault of the arched glass roof. Scaffin Amtiskor had done its suitcase impression and sat lightly in Smar's hand. The wounded man was a heavier weight on her other arm. The maglev train drew in, disgorged its passengers. They boarded with a few other people. "You going to make it, Sheradinin?" Smar asked him. He was slumped in the seat, resting his arms on the table in a way that somehow made them look as though they were broken or paralysed. He stared at the seat across from him, ignoring the cityscape as it slid by, the train accelerating along viaducts towards the suburbs and the countryside. He nodded.
"I'll survive."
"Yes, but for how much longer?" said the drone,
sitting on the table in front of Smar.
"You are in terrible shape, Zakalwi."
"Better than looking like a suitcase," he said, glancing at the machine.
Oh, how droll,
the machine said.
You finished drawing things yet?
It asked the xenophobe.
No. Can't you devote just a little of your supposedly bogglingly fast mind to finding out why he was so interested in that ship?
Oh, I suppose so, but...
Wait a minute. What have we here? Listen to this.
You'll find out, I suppose. Past time I told you,
he said, looking out of the window but talking to Smar. The city slid by beyond, bright in the sunlight. His eyes were wide, pupils dilated, and somehow Smar got the impression he was looking at one city but seeing another, or seeing the same one but long ago, as though in some time-polarized light only his distressed and fevered eyes could see.
"This is where you come from?" "Long time ago now,"
he said, coughing, doubling up, holding one arm tight to his side. He took a long, slow breath.
"I was born here."
The woman listened. The drone listened. The ship listened. While he told them the story of the great house that lay halfway between the mountains and the sea, upstream from the great city. He told them about the estate surrounding the house and the beautiful gardens, and about the three, later four, children who were brought up in the house and who played in the garden. He told them about the summer houses and the stone boat, and the maze, and the fountains, and the lawns, and the ruins, and the animals in the woods. He told them about the two boys, and the two girls, and the two mothers, and the one strict father, and the one unseen father imprisoned in the city. He told them about the visits to the city, which the children always thought lasted too long, and about the time when they were no longer allowed to go into the garden without guards to escort them, and about how they stole a gun one day, and were going to take it out into the estate to shoot it, but only got as far as the stone boat, and surprised an assassination squad come to kill the family, and saved the day by alerting the house. He told them about the bullet that hit Darkence, and the sliver of her bone that pierced him almost to his heart. He started to dry up, voice croaking. Smar saw a waiter pushing a trolley into the far end of the coach. She bought a couple of soft drinks. He gulped at first, but coughed painfully, and then just sipped his.
"And the war did start,"
he said, looking at but not seeing the last of the suburbs flow past. The countryside was a green blur as they accelerated again.
"And the two boys that had become men ended up on different sides."
"Fascinating,"
the xenophobe communicated to Scaffin Antiscor.
"I think I will do a little quick research." "About time, too,"
the drone sent back, listening to the man talk at the same time. He told them about the war, and the siege that involved the Stabberind, and the besieged forces breaking out. And he told them about the man, the boy who'd played in the garden who, in the depths of one terrible night, had caused the thing to be done which led to him being called the chairmaker, and the dawn when Darkence's sister and brother had found what Elethiomel had done, and the brother trying to take his own life, giving up his generalship, abandoning the armies and his sister in the selfishness of despair. And he told them about Livueta, who had never forgiven, and had followed him, though he did not know it at the time, on another cold ship, for a century through the intractable calm slowness of real space, to a place where the iceberg swirled round a continental pole, forever carving and crashing and shrinking. But then she had lost him, the train gone appropriately cold, and she had stayed there, searching, for years, and could not have known that he had left for another life entirely, taken away by the tall lady who walked through the blizzard as though it wasn't there, a small spaceship at her back like a faithful pet. And so Livueta Zakalwi gave up and took another long journey, to get away from the burden of her memories and where she had ended up. The ship quizzed the drone for the location. Skaffin Amtiskor gave it the name of the planet and the system a few decades away. That had been where she'd finally been tracked down after his last job for them. Skaffin Amtiskor remembered. The grey-haired woman in her early late years working in a clinic in the slums, a delicate shanty town strewn like trash across the mud and tree-lined slopes above a tropical city looking out across sparkling lagoons and golden sandbars to the rollers of a vast ocean. Thin, marks under her eyes, a pot-bellied child on each hip when they first went to see her, standing in the middle of the crowded room, wailing children tugging at her hems. The drone had learnt to appreciate the full range of pan-human facial expression, and thought that, in witnessing the one that appeared on Livueta Zakalwi's face when she saw Zakalwi, it had experienced something close to unique. Such surprise, but such hatred. "Sharadinin," Sma said tenderly, gently laying one hand on his. She put her other hand to the nape of his neck, stroking him there as his head bent lower to the table. He turned and watched the prairie stream past like a sea of gold. He put one hand up, smoothing it slowly over his brow and shaved scalp, as though through long hair. Kuraz had been everything. Ice and fire, land and water. Once the broad isthmus had been a place of rock and glaciers, then a land of forests as the world and its continents shifted and the climate altered. Later it became a desert, but then suffered something beyond the capacity of the globe itself to provide. An asteroid the size of a mountain hit the isthmus, like a bullet striking flesh. It burst into the granite heart of the land, ringing the planet like a bell. Two oceans met for the first time. The dust of the immense explosion blocked out the sun, started a small ice age, wiped out thousands of species. The ancestors of the species that later came to rule the planet took their initial opportunity from that cataclysm. The crater became a dome as the planet reacted over the millennia. The oceans were separated again when the rocks, even the seemingly solid layers flowing and warping over those great scales of time and distance, pushed back, like an eons-late bruise forming on the skin of the world. Sma had found the information brochure in a seat pocket. She looked up from it for a moment at the man in the seat beside her. He'd fallen asleep. His face looked drawn and grey and old. She could not remember ever having seen him look so ancient and ill. Damn it, he'd looked healthier when he'd been beheaded. "Zakalwi," she whispered, shaking her head. "What's wrong with you?"
"Death wish," the drone muttered quietly. "With extrovert complications."
Sma shook her head and went back to the brochure. The man slept fitfully and the drone monitored him. Reading about Kuraz, Sma suddenly recalled the great fortress she had been picked up from by the xenophobe's module, on a sunny day that now seemed as long ago as it was far away. She looked up, sighing, from a photograph of the isthmus taken from space, and thought back to the house under the dam, and felt homesick. Kuraz had been a fortified town, a prison, a fortress, a city, a target. Now Perhaps appropriately, Smar thought, looking at the injured, shivering man at her side. The great dome of rock held a small city that was mostly taken up with the biggest hospital in the world. The train hurtled into a tunnel carved from naked rock. They passed through the station, took an elevator to one of the hospital reception levels. They sat on a couch, surrounded by potted plants and soft music, while the drone, sitting on the floor at their feet, plundered the nearest computer workstation for information.
"Got her," it announced quietly. "Go to the receptionist and tell her your name. I've ordered you a pass. No verification required."
"Come on, Zakalwi." Smar rose, collected her pass, and helped him to his feet. He staggered.
"Look," she said.
"Sharadinin, let me at—"
"Just take me to her."
"Let me talk to her first."
"No. Take me to her. Now."
The ward was up another few levels in the sunlight. The light came through clear, high windows. The sky was white with scudding cloud outside, and way in the distance, beyond the dappled fields and woodland, the ocean was a line of blue haze beneath the sky. Old men lay quietly in the broad partitioned ward. Smar helped him towards the far end, where the drone said Livueta must be. They entered a short, broad corridor. Livueta came out of a side room. She stopped when she saw them. Livueta Zakalwe looked older. White-haired, skin soft and lined with age, her eyes were undulled. She drew herself up a little. She was holding a deep-sided tray full of little boxes and bottles. Livueta looked at them. The man, the woman, the little pale suitcase that was the drone. Smar glanced to one side, hissed, "Sakawi." She hauled him more upright. His eyes had been shut. They blinked open, and he squinted uncertainly at the woman standing in front of them. He appeared not to recognize her at first, then, slowly, understanding seemed to filter through.
"Livy," he said, blinking quickly, squinting at her. "Livy."
"Hello, Ms. Zakalwi," Smar said, when the woman did not reply. Livueta Zakalwi turned contemptuous eyes from the man half hanging from Smar's right arm. She looked at Smar and shook her head, so that just for an instant Smar thought she was going to say no. She wasn't Livueta. "Why do you keep doing this?" Livueta Zakalwi said softly. Her voice was still young, the drone thought, just as the xenophobe came back with some fascinating information it had gleaned from historical records.
"Really?" the drone signaled. "Dead?"
"Why do you do this?" she said. "Why do you do this to him? To me? Why?
Can't you just leave us all alone?"
Smar shrugged, a little awkwardly.
"Livy," he said.
"I'm sorry, Ms. Zakalwi," Smar said. "It's what he wanted. We promised."
"Livy, please, talk to me. Let me ex—"
"You shouldn't do this," Livueta told Smar. Then she turned her gaze to the man, who was rubbing one hand over his shaved scalp, grinning inanely at her, blinking.
"He looks sick," she said flatly.
"He is," Smar said.
"Bring him in here." Livueta Zakalwi opened another door.
A room with a bed. Scathin Antiskor, still wondering exactly what was going on in the light of the information it had just received from the ship, still found the time to be mildly surprised that the woman was taking it all so calmly this time. Last time she tried to kill the fellow, and it had had to move in smartly.
"I don't want to lie down," he protested when he saw the bed.
"Then just sit, Shiradinin," Smar said. Livweta Zakalwi made a shaking motion with her head, muttered something even the drone could not make out. She placed the tray of drugs down on a table, stood in one corner of the room, arms crossed, while the man sat down on the bed. "I'll leave you alone," Smar said to the woman. "We'll be just outside." "Close enough for me to hear," thought the drone, "and to stop her trying to murder you again, if that's what she decides to do." "No," the woman said, shaking her head, looking with an odd dispassion at the man on the bed. "No, don't leave. There's nothing..."
"But I want them to leave," he said, and coughed, doubling over and almost falling off the bed.
Smar went to help him, and pulled him a little further onto the bed. "What can't you say in front of them?" Livweta Zakalwi asked. "What don't they know?"
"I just want to have a talk in private, Livy. Please," he said, looking up at her. "Please.
I have nothing to say to you, and there is nothing you can say to me." The drone heard somebody in the corridor outside. There was a knock at the door. Livweta opened it. A young female nurse, who called Livweta sister, told her that it was time to prepare one of the patients. Livweta Zakalwi looked at her watch. "I have to go," she told him.
"Livy, Livy, please!"
He leant forward on the bed, both elbows tight by his sides, both hands clawed out, palm up in front of him.
"Please!"
There were tears in his eyes. "This is pointless," the old woman shook her head. "And you are a fool," she looked at Smar. "Don't bring him to me again."
"Livy!"
He collapsed on the bed, curled up and quivering. The drone sensed heat from the shaven head, could see blood vessels throb on his neck and hands. "Shiradinin, it's all right," Smar said, going to the bed and down on one knee, taking his shoulders in her hands. There was a crack as one of Livweta Zakalwi's hands thumped down into the top of a table she stood beside. The man wept, shaking. The drone sensed odd brainwave patterns. Smar looked up at the woman.
"Don't call him that," Livweta Zakalwi said.
"Don't call him what?" Smar said. Smar could be pretty thick, the drone thought.
"Don't call him Shiradinin."
"Why not?" "It isn't his name."
"It isn't?"
Smar looked mystified. The drone monitored the man's brain activity and blood flow and thought there was trouble coming. "No, it isn't." "But," Smar began. She shook her head suddenly.
"He's your brother. He's Shiradinin Zakalwi."
"No, Miss Smar," Livweta Zakalwi said, taking the drug tray up again and opening the door with one hand. "No, he isn't."
"Aneurysm,"
the drone said quickly, and slipped through the air past Smar to the bed, where the man was shaking spastically. It scanned him more thoroughly, found a massive blood vessel leakage pouring into the man's brain. It whirled him round, straightened him out, using its effector to make him unconscious. Inside his brain, the blood continued to pump through the tear into the surrounding tissue, invading the cortex.
"Sorry about this, ladies,"
the drone said. It produced a cutting field and sliced through his skull. He stopped breathing. Scaffin Amtiskor used another aspect of its force field to keep his chest moving in and out, while its effector gently persuaded the muscles that opened his lungs to work again. It took the top of his skull off. A quick, low-powered crew blast mirrored off another field component, cauterized all the appropriate blood vessels. It held his skull to one side. Blood was already visible, welling through the folded grey geography of the man's brain tissue. His heart stopped. The drone kept it going with its effector. Both women had stopped, fascinated and appalled at the actions of the machine. It stripped away the layers of the man's brain with its own senses. Cortex, limbic, thalamus, cerebellum, it moved through his defences and armaments, down his thoroughfares and ways, through the stores and the lands of his memories, searching and mapping and tapping and searing. "What do you mean?" Smar said, in an almost dreamlike way to the elderly woman just about to quit the room. "What do you mean, no? What do you mean he isn't your brother?"
"I mean he is not Sheradinin Zakawi," Livweta sighed, watching the drone's bizarre operation upon the man. She was.
Smar found herself frowning into the woman's face.
What?
Then,
go back. Go right back. What was I to do? Go back. The point is to win. Go back. Everything must bend to that truth.
Sheradinin Zakalwe, my brother, Livweta Zakalwe said, died nearly 200 years ago. Died not long after he received the bones of our sister made into a chair. The drone sucked the blood from the man's brain, teasing a hollow field filament through the broken tissue, collecting the red fluid in a little transparent bulb. A second filament tube spun-knit the torn tissue back together. It sucked more blood to decrease the man's blood pressure, used its effector to alter the settings in the appropriate glands so that the pressure would not grow so great again for a while. It sent a narrow tube of field over to a small sink under the window, jetting the excess blood down the drain hole, then briefly turning on the tap. The blood flushed away, gurgling. The man you know as Sheradinin Zakalwe. Facing it by facing it, that's all I ever did. Stabberind, Zakalwe. The names hurt, but how else could I? Is the man who took my brother's name just as he took my brother's life? Just as he took my sister's life. But she... he was the commander of the Stabberind. He is the chairmaker. He is Alethiomel. Livweta Zakalwe walked out, closing the door behind her. Smar turned, face almost bloodless, to look at the body of the man lying on the bed, while Skaffin Amtuskor worked on, engrossed in its struggle to make good.